You were listening to Rusted Root, a bit called Ecstasy from their album When I Woke. That's very appropriate music for our guest tonight. He has a very strong foundation, but throws in a bit of chaos to make things interesting. And we're going to be hearing more from Gregory Sams and his idea about our reality in just a moment. And without a doubt, if you are into alternative anything, this guy's probably already touched your life. I'm Sherry Edwards, your host for Sound Health Radio on VBS Radio. And for the next hour, I'm delighted that you could join us for a bit of conversation designed to provide options and information for self-health. We're going to do a few announcements first. Well, just a couple. First announcement, we have been having so much fun with the new BioVoice computer program that gives you a glimpse into who you really are. Several hundred of you have contacted us, and we've been able to do the vocal prints for a lot of you. You just speak into a microphone, and in a couple minutes, it's painless. The computer does the rest. In seconds, you have a 3-to-5-page printout of the real you, and it's fun, and it's exciting, and it's revealing. This month's O Magazine, that's Oprah's magazine, has an article in it about will the real you please stand up, and about being authentic. And I think a lot of us have lost this inner knowledge about who we really are because we're living for and through other people and what other people expect of us. So we've created this program to help you find the real you, and you can't hide behind your voice. So that's the first biggie. Please keep calling us. We love doing it, and it's fun. So we're going to be taking calls tonight. The toll-free number in California, 888-810-8322. The U.S. number is 877-876-5227. Canada number, 888-810, well, that's the same one, 8322. I looked on the site today, and there's like 10 new numbers. They even have Skype now, BBS Radio, Skype. They have a direct line, 530-876-3222. And I think we're going to have some controversy, so give us a call. We'll also be monitoring the email for those of you who are tying up your phone line with your computer. And that's just soundhealth@soundhealth.org. And this is Sound Health Radio. On with the show, then. Gregory Sams is our guest. He has done so much in his life. He reminds me of Don, the producer, here on BBS Radio. I think if the two of them ever met, they would love each other immediately. They just seem to be on the same path. Welcome to the show, Gregory Sams.
Good evening, Sherry Edwards.
And
pleasure
you're coming to,
here.
To us from London, right?
From Kensal Rise, London, where our one and only tornado ripped through just a couple months ago.
Good grief. It's the middle of the night, are there, right? Like 2 o'clock or something?
It's 2 o'clock in the morning, yeah.
Well, thank you for staying up.
I had a cup of strong green tea half an hour ago.
I read your bio. I am impressed. Veggie Burger King, writer, publisher, artist, philosopher. Where do you start? We only have an hour. And our audience likes to hear about things that will make their lives a lot easier, anything from better food to better thought. So where do you want to go?
Well, I
what do you want to talk about?
Well, I started off with food, of course.
Uh-huh.
And that's something that's been really satisfying for me because I got into that at a time when people didn't know what brown rice was. The only time they saw sesame seeds was on a hamburger bun. There was no, people didn't eat beans in their diet unless it was baked beans. And it's just been really gratifying to see that food coming back into people's diets or at least becoming available in the market and see the connection that makes with the earth.
Didn't you start in California where all this wonderful health food stuff began anyway?
No, and it didn't really begin in California. But it was sort of more Boston when macrobiotics came in. And macrobiotics was the first time that health foods became food instead of with herbs and potions and a couple of products. And macrobiotic product by eating whole cereals and beans, like sesame, sunflower, and pumpkin. Things we now kind of take for granted, but which I don't know if you did. I mean, do you eat some of that stuff?
Yes, absolutely. I feel better when I do.
Absolutely. And we introduced people to it, and we had a sort of very hip, very hip restaurant called Seed. All the kind of cream of the 60s came down, John Lennon, touring bands. So it was like the only 60s hippie place to go and eat. Some people came and didn't even like the food, but that was the only place to eat.
Maybe they just liked the company.
Pardon?
Maybe they just liked the company.
Well, they liked the food, too, and because it was the first time they experienced it, and they noticed the extra energy, and they noticed the different feelings. And people who used to be merchant seamen, I'd meet years later, and they were now running massage schools or writing books about the Blue Planet, and they got that change through eating the food and eating stuff that connected them with the Earth. And, you know, that people eating a natural diet is where a lot of the green movement started as well.
People I also find that not only do I have to, not have to, I like to eat the good stuff, but I have to stay away from the bad guys too. Adulterated wheat and sugars and pops and all of these additives. So it's a twofold thing for me. Do you think it is for most people?
It's a what thing for you?
It's a twofold. Not only do I have to eat the good stuff, but stay away from the bad stuff. Additives, for one.
Yeah, well, I kind of made it my policy to always keep that out of my diet from the age of sort of 17. Yeah, my brother and I were lucky because we were brought up by parents who embraced a sort of a more natural diet in the 50s. That was because my dad was dying and he'd been given up on by Western medicine. Somebody said, check out this Dr. Nakadati, a Japanese doctor. And this was like, so this was 1947, it was before I was born. And this Japanese doctor, because doctors said, no canned food, no frozen food, because that was as processed as it got then. But fresh vegetables, whole cereals, my mother had to bake her own whole wheat bread. And no sugar, and put them on, or meats, and it was what you could call a macrobiotic diet today, but he got better, like, you know, in a couple of months he was fine again. And so we always ate pretty good food because of that, not knowing why. And then we both delved into sweets and junk food when we left home, but then macrobiotics came up, we kind of saw it made sense. And so I used to have to import stuff to get it. You know, I'd have to get load import containers from Japan. It was really, I wanted to eat the stuff, but I had to sell it to other people too. Now, what's really gratifying to me 40 years later is I can go to a supermarket and buy all that stuff, and I don't have to import it and hire people and all that stuff to do it.
Well, how did you move from food to chaos theory?
Gosh, well, I went through food for 20 years, and I launched the first veggie burger ever when I was 32, and that was kind of my idealized business. I ran it, the virtual company, but I had £2.5 million worth of sales coming out of my, when I was running it from my spare bedroom with contractors, and it just exploded out there, but that got so big that after 6 years, you know, I didn't want to run it anymore because it was getting complicated and I couldn't run out of my bedroom. I was hiring office staff. So I sold that, and after 2 years, I was taught about chaos. I was introduced to chaos theory by an artist, an Australian artist, Howie Cook. And it just made sense of everything I'd ever kind of thought about in my life. Because I'd had, you know, George Osawa, who taught macrobiotics, he didn't just teach about eating, but, you know, he had philosophy, which we now recognize as sort of deep wisdom. But just taking responsibility for yourself, and, You know, I read Lao Tzu as a kid, who talked about following the path, and I've sort of always been thinking about things, and I've been meditating from college, and chaos theory just made sense of everything that had already made sense in my life, and pulled all these sort of single cables into one much bigger, stronger strand. I just thought people have got to know about chaos theory, because the whole universe folds together with in a state of freedom. I mean, it is a state of freedom that has our solar system orbiting regularly and the sun coming up every 24 hours and oceans full of fish and all the symbiotic relationships you have between plants and animals and between bacteria and intestines. And there's all these sort of wonderful symbiotic relationships. And only chaos theory really explains how all this stuff works. It doesn't explain how it works, but it sees that it does work and it recognizes it. And that's like what chaos theory has discovered. And what the scientists didn't look at is applying that to us, to sociology, to human beings. Because scientists don't do that. Sociology is a dirty word, as you know, for a pure scientist, as is, you know, the sort of work you're doing. There has been until recently. I see you got an award, though. Did you not, for your work?
Oh, yes, we did.
And, but, you know, that's really fantastic because, you know, until recently, anything like that was sort of, you know, just dismissed by science as poppycock.
Well, this idea that you put in one of your books that we're going to talk about by Thomas Paine, can you quote that or do you have it near you?
Well, the quote by Thomas Paine?
Yes.
Which one?
Well, yeah, perhaps the sentiments contained, that one?
Yeah, that's right. And
do you want to read it or you want me to?
I'll read it.
Okay.
Yeah, perhaps the sentiments contained in the following pages are not yet sufficiently fashionable to procure them general favor. A long habit of not thinking a thing wrong gives it a superficial appearance of being right and raises at first a formidable outcry in defense of custom. But the tumult soon subsides. Time makes more converts than reason. And that's Thomas Paine's introduction to Common Sense. And I'm sort of making, you know, a point now, I mean, a couple hundred years later, that, you know, we look at traditional practice and give it great respect just because it's been going on for a long time. But that doesn't make it right. You know, the practice of custom doesn't make something right. And Thomas Paine asked the question, do we need a king? And, you know, what are we getting from the king? We could do a better version ourselves. And he turned a tax revolt, by the Boston Tea Party, that was a tax revolt, he turned it into a revolution, as we know, to get rid of the king. And I am asking the question, and it's a bold question, but do we need the state which replaced the king, but with, you know, far more people working for it. And because unlike all those other things in the universe which come together through freedom that chaos theory recognizes, the state doesn't operate through freedom, it operates through coercion. And it says we can plan things, we're smart enough that we can make this system work better than the chaos could. It's like we'll plot the, it's like saying we could do a better job of plotting the orbits and the speeds of the planet around the sun, so let's tinker with it so that we get, you know, it's too complex a system to tinker with. And one of the reasons that society is broken down in so many places is just that more and more control creates less and less order. In fact, it's Lao Tzu. Pardon?
And looking at your biography, it seems to me that whatever you take on, acceptance follows. Has anybody ever seen that about you?
I have noticed it, actually, that I seem to sort of pick things quite well or see things quite well ahead. And I think that's probably because myself and my brother, my brother runs the soil, is the chairman of the Soil Association, which is the organic body in the UK now. And he launched Green and Black Chocolates, which you may or may not have had the pleasure of sampling yet. But we were brought up on natural foods. And so we were brought up in things that were only recently growing in the earth. And I think the more of that vibration you have, the more you kind of see what your connections are. And you hear shamans talking about their plants, talking to them in the jungle, and which is how they know that this plant will heal that, and if you combine these other plants, you'll get effects from them. And people say, how did you figure that out? And they said, the plants speak to us. And I mean, I used to feel connected with the spirit of the sesame plant. And because I loved that seed, and I loved tahini, and I loved mixing tahini with honey and with miso and all the things you could do with it. And it's like, it's a really healthy, wholesome food. And I just think, everything I can do to help this species grow is good for us, and it's good for the species. And I would actually feel a connection with things that, we view as inert and without spirit. And in fact, a plant, sesame seed or whatever, it's an incredibly intricate thing. And the way it evolves and the way it latches on to, supplying food to other animals or systems assures its success. And so, I used to, it's just that early connection. And I think it gets me a little bit ahead of, where things are going.
I hear sounds from things and people, and that's how all of my work started. But I've talked to trees and grass and plants and cows and carrots all my life, so you're not telling me anything that's new. We used to go out and tell the carrots, ask the carrots, is it time to pick you? Are you going to be okay tomorrow with this? And if they weren't, they wouldn't let go of the soil very well. But if it was time, they let go very easily.
Yeah.
And you just need to listen. But what amazes me is all the foods, the good foods you were raised on from a youngster. It not only helped your body and your energy, but it helped you be aware on many more levels and helped you be so creative. Because if anybody reads your bibliography, it's the work of 10 people. And it has depth and breadth, and it's just amazing. So that was the question, and you've already answered it. What would you attribute that to when you're saying good food?
Well, my dad gave me my parents were obviously me. I wouldn't care without them. And my dad, he gave me a few kind of ideas. He said a few things to me that really stuck with me when I was a kid, and one of them was just made so much sense to me intuitively. He said, never follow the beaten path. And I said, well, of course he wants to follow the beaten path. But then obviously, it's a tautology because most people do follow the beaten track and always will. But, he said, always keep off of it. And when I people often have called me courageous, because I went out there and I sold brown rice when nobody had heard of it and put it in bags and ended up getting container lids out of it by, many a week. And I launched the first veggie burger. I left all of that when, it was down to putting a pound of brown rice into a bag for a penny less than somebody else, And I left all of that, and I launched the first veggie burger. And people sort of call me courageous, and I say, it doesn't seem that to me, because, courageous is, charging up, the bar that, if you want to open a new chain of burger bars and you go up there and try and get a space in between McDonald's and Burger King and who does what, I see a hill that nobody's defending, and I stroll up to the top of it to plant my flag, and that just seems easy to me.
In your bibliography, it states that the whole company you were working for refused this idea, and you just, well, this is going to work, and I'm going to do it, and you did.
Well, yeah. Well, no, the company that was selling rice and beans and seeds and seaweeds and flowers and billing and making jam and peanut butter and all of that, as it got bigger and bigger, it got, into financial troubles. As business rates doubled every year for 3 years and blah, blah, blah. And it was in deep shit. The bank and we had shareholders at that point. And they really sort of saying, hey, what are you going to do? We got to get the overdraft down. We got to get this, that, blah, blah, blah. And I was actually knocked out for three or four months with acute hepatitis. And I couldn't go to work while my liver was recovering. And I came up with this veggie burger product to save the company. And we figured out how we could make it without having any overheads, no more staff, no more premises. We'd have it all contracted out. And I worked, put all my effort, first of all, into making the recipe. But and I came and I said, listen, look at this product. It's wonderful, And actually sort of started the launch through that company. And that was my salvation for the company. And they said, no, new product, food product, they all, 95% of new products fail. Why should this one be any different? What are you going to do about, getting us out of the financial shit? And so I ended up saying, well, fuck it. So I ended up buying the product from the company, leaving the company. It was worthless, so I couldn't sort of sell my shares. So I just gave my shares to my brother and set off to do the veggie burger. And it was the best move I ever made. I mean, it instantly took off. I mean, there was a huge void there for a vegetarian product that, tasted good, looked good, sexy packaging, and it was cheap. It was cheaper than the meat burger, and it had more protein, a better quality, and twice the calcium. It was a really good product.
What do you contribute your creativity to? That's probably a question out of left field, isn't it?
Well, I'll give you a straight product. I'm a straight answer. I'm very careful about what drugs I take. And I sort of, I like cannabis. And I've managed to get off alcohol and get off tobacco, which I used to smoke. I avoid pharmaceuticals unless my life is threatened. I use it. Is this permissible to say on the radio, internet radio in America?
I guess it's too late now if it isn't. Okay.
We're a bit more liberal over here, and I was talking about the sesame seed before, the hemp plant that used to be all for American farmers used to grow it. You had to grow it by law. It was such a valuable plant. Thomas Jefferson and all their founding fathers grew hemp on their fields. It's been used as medicine for thousands of years. It makes great rope, and makes great paper. The seeds of it are really nutritious, and people can smoke a bit or eat a bit of the leaf and feel really good and happy. And all of those other uses are banned because people didn't feel happy with it, which is, I don't know. I've got a chapter in my book devoted to the sort of the craziness of, telling us what we do with our heads, but letting us put anything we like into our bodies so we can, you can eat yourself to death on nothing but, potato crisps and hamburgers for however many years it would take. And nobody will put you in jail. Nobody will fine you. You won't even get an official caution.
But they can control all of that food with taxes and inspections. But they don't allow us to have things they can't inspect and control in tax. There you go. That's the real piece of it. We have a couple of questions that I'm going to bring in later that pertain to this. We've got one, two, four questions come in on the internet so far.
Okay, great.
But I want to step back a minute and see if you got explain chaos theory. You know, we've got 35 minutes here. I don't want it to take that long because I have lots of other questions. But what really is chaos theory?
Okay, well, chaos theory is, it's a science. It's not a theory like E equals MC squared. It's a science. It's a new way, new approach, to a new type of science. And it recognizes that a complex system, complex systems find their own sort of an order, and a complex system is something with more parts than you can count, which is acting independently and unpredictably. And when you put these elements together, you tend to get a stable system of some sort. Whether it's a cloud of galactic gas condensing into a sun, or whether it's all the components of a rainforest producing the right amount of rain, animals, plants. I mean, nobody's planning where the tree's going, where the river's going to wind, and how much it's going to evaporate every day, but it all forms into a system that works. And when you stick a bunch of people together, and, you know, a lot of that, you'll see restaurants appearing, lots of different types of shoes to wear, hairdressing styles, different types of music. It's all... it's not really explicable scientifically, but this chaos theory recognizes that that happens. So it is, and it happens according to similar principles. There are similar ways, strategies that are used, whether it's that which forms a structure in a mountain range or in a tree. And they don't actually explain why or how this is, and how it's happening, but they see it's happening and they can predict it and they can use it for all sorts of study aspects of the world that couldn't be studied before because they were too irregular, too irrepeatable in a laboratory. Does that
kind of like a revolution or evolution? Evolution is an example of chaos theory? Because everything happens and we don't know why everything happens. It just is there.
I think I would apply it to evolution. But I'm looking at the whole subject quite a bit more in the book that's going to be coming out. My first book was on Common Sense, and which explores why society works and why organized government and the state doesn't seem to work. You know, it always fails, whether it's been the Roman Empire or the church, when the church used to run countries, or communism. I mean, all these different systems eventually fail.
And it's all about
something.
Pardon? It's all about control.
Yeah,
who
it's
gets
about
the control.
And it's there's only one basic tool of the type of government that we have running us, and that is you do something, or you'll be damaged or hurt. And that's coercion. That's the basic underlying tool. And you don't use that with your children. You know, you don't. You know, we know if you constantly tell your children, do this, or I'm going to hit you, or do that, and I'll spank you, and you spank him when he does it, and you're not going to have a nice, healthy, balanced kid. And we don't have them. It usually backfires, that technique.
You're going to have a bully. This leads into a couple of the questions that came in. Since you're in London and came from L.A., I read that on your bio in parenthetics, What does the rest of the world think of Americans and the way our teenage bullying government is run?
America really has become a laughing stock, but not one you really want to laugh about. It's too scary to think about. It's got 737 military bases around the world. It's It's an empire, but it's an empire at its peak, you know, and it's crumbling, and everybody sees the underlying weakness of the United States.
It's without wisdom.
It's
a bullying society without, well, I should say, government, because the people here, most of them don't agree. We just don't know how to get out of it at this point.
The country's been taken over. Eisenhower warned that this might happen, and we've seen it happen all over the world. You know, you've seen, you know, out of a stable situation, you'll have sort of Hitler suddenly arise in Germany, or you'll have the whole Argentinian economy will collapse and everybody's money is gone, and you know, Russia, you had suddenly the Iron Curtain fell. Then you had, you know, semi-democracy, and now it looks like the sort of the KGP, who became the mafia, have now running the country. And you know, America's no exception. It's the state. When you do, I'll hit you. You know, do this or I'll hit you as your basic tool. The state gets bigger. You know, the more crime, the bigger the state gets. The more war, the more threats, the bigger the state gets. So, you know, all of these things feed into them, all the things that we think we need them to control and protect us from get worse under their management. And in America, it has been taken over. You haven't really, it's not the land of the free anymore.
And do you think it is a lack of self-responsibility? People are lazy?
I could blame it on the people, but it's also partly because the people were so successful. You know, the chaos of early America, where you had no government, virtually no government, you know, When Washington was president in his second or third year, he was presented with the naval budget for that year, and he's going down the budget, and it says with the warship subdivisions, and it says new anchor, you know, however many dollars, and he says new anchor. What's wrong with the old anchor? And you know, it was small government, so people with their chaos and their just natural interactions just expanded. You know, and America became the most thriving, healthy economy in the world, and it could absorb the poor and the freedom lovers, and you know, and it worked. Though we won't talk about the karma of the Native Americans, but that, you know, the actual chaos of not having, you know, of people being together, that's what made America what it is. But that wealth, you know, attracted an ever-growing state, and people, you know, it was stupid, but it was trusting, and it was well-meant when they said, okay, we'll let the government take care of our Social Security, and we'll let them take care of this, we'll let them take care of that, you know, we'll let them tell us what we can eat, what we can think, what we can, you know. It just gets worse and worse, and because it was such a healthy nation, the state that grew upon it has become a massive worldwide warmongering machine that thrives on war and conflict.
I can see the business is going down.
Yeah, because when you put your money into a bomb and you explode it somewhere, you know, who's profiting from that?
The cleanup,
you know,
people.
Yeah. Pardon?
The cleanup people. And then you've got all of these contracts to everybody's buddies to come and do the cleanup. What's happening here? I don't know if the rest of the world knows this, but the U.S. government is taking from the business person in taxes that they promised to provide back to the state. Well, they aren't providing it back to the state, and now the state is taxing us. So we're getting it from both sides, because the government didn't give our state welfare money. They have taxed all the businesses' gross income for their employees. There's another 6% tax on top of that. What they're doing is running businesses out of business, and that's going to be where the collapse comes, as far as I can see. in addition to everybody just not having any inner faith, any authenticity to who they are. They just don't know who they are.
Yeah.
This leads to two other questions that's come in here. Do you believe the U.S. and BBS news media?
Do I believe what?
Do you believe what's put out by the U.S. and BBS news media?
Well, it's a varied program of things put out. And I'm fairly new to it. But the program that's following this sounds like I want to tune into as well, you know, which is on an aspect of spirit that sort of resonates with some stuff I'm writing in my next book. So I'm a first-time guest here, and I'm honored to be here, but I'm not sure, you know, it's a new one for me.
You know, I think this person really meant BBC news media.
Oh, BBC.
Yeah.
Do I believe them?
I mean, they wrote BBS, but I think they really meant BBC.
Well, not per se. I mean, there are people on the BBC who I do believe and people who I don't believe, you know. But I like their reporting.
Well, we don't believe the U.S. news media here. We just believe it's very controlled.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would totally agree with that.
I want to talk...
Access you, pardon?
Go ahead.
Well, I just say you've got access to the outside world through the Internet. And there's lots of stuff there, but what you get on TV and newspapers is not worth the whatever it's printed or broadcast on.
Well, there's a big move here to not to have people not believe what's on the Internet. But I want to leave some time. I want to talk about your website and your books, and we've got a lot of other questions. Your website, Chaos Works, is that like Chaos Works as in an iron or metal works, like
it's,
a factory?
Well, first of all, it's chaos-works.
Okay.
There's a dash between the chaos and the works.com.
Okay.
And that was what I called sort of my company, and it's like chaos is, you know, we use it, Norm, you know, most people associate it with your newspaper, you know, like the chaos in Iraq or the chaos of that sense, but chaos in the scientific term, chaos theory, is another word for freedom. It's a system that operates of its own. And so without control and unpredictably, like the weather, is a chaotic system. And I know it's not so much the case these days, but you know, most of our lives we've had really stable weather systems, and the monsoons come at this time of the year, and it's warm this time and cold this time, and it's all messed up at the moment. But that's a chaotic system because you know, there's no way you can ever say exactly what time it's going to rain a week from now, or how much, or where. However many computer points you are tracking, and that's yeah, that's the kind of.
But there'll always be rain. We just can't control it.
Well, there. Listen, who knows? Who knows what's happening? You know, parts of the planet are moving into drought. But you do get that system, and so that's chaos is working there. That's basically it. And mine is a works because I'm toiling away, and not toiling away, but I'm playing away and doing things all the time. So this is where chaos works, and it happens in you know, the number of times that people sort of meet here who needed to meet, you know, all that kind of spooky stuff that goes on. I just kind of take it for granted. Chaos works.
You have much more on the website than just theory. I mean, it's absolutely full of wonderful art. Where do the fractals come in?
The fractals. That was all. That was what I did for my shop because I opened up Strange Attractions in 1991, and that was the I was racing to be the first shop in the world dedicated to chaos theory, but it was the only shop ever dedicated to chaos theory. And these fractal images are a manifestation of chaos theory, a representation of chaos theory, because they emulate the sort of systems that trees and plants and mountains use, the sort of mathematical systems that make those things have a character and a shape, like certain mountain ranges have their own fractal numbers. And these are sort of mathematical equivalents, where just a kind of slightly chaotic, unpredictable mathematical set of events will create this unbelievable picture. So that's where the fractals come from. And I used to put them on posters and T-shirts and postcards and mugs, a coffee mug, jigsaw puzzles, all sorts of things, and license the images to other people. And hundreds of them. I spent months of my life, a couple of years of my life, traveling through fractal universes all night, sort of taking snapshots of particular places.
There's one on there of a green-faced cat that I
That's right. But
I couldn't figure out how that was a fractal.
That wasn't, no. There's also bits of my just sort of graphic art in there. There's another one near that of a cat with a fractal, set into it, coming out of a fractal, in the same section of the gallery as the one you mentioned. But yeah, no, they're not all fractal pictures, but most of them are.
Are these things that people can go on your website and buy and look at and...
Well, they can, there's nothing to buy. I mean, there's galleries on the website. You can take a look at them. And if somebody wanted to buy an image to put in there, to use it to manufacture T-shirts or posters or something like that, they could. A lot of my posters are actually on sale online, but I can't find out who's publishing them or because they're not paying me royalties.
One of the things that we're able to do with people and looking at their voice is we can find a signature sound.
Yeah.
And we play the sound through water and then shine lasers on it, and it creates geometric shapes on the wall. I just think those would make great posters and photographs. You could see the geometric shape of your own signature soul sound.
Wow.
So your site gave me some ideas for that.
Pardon?
Do you still have your... Go ahead. There's such a delay. It's tripping us up. What kind of products did you have in your chaos store besides the fractals?
We sold books. We had chaotic toys. Which were sometimes kind of things that are executive toys on desks. And we had lava lamps, of course, sort of spinning dream machine devices. And we'd have little events. We'd have, noted scientists in the field coming down and giving us sort of lectures in a salon de chaos once a month. But then when I started licensing my pictures to proper poster manufacturers and bigger companies, because I was doing the one-man band stuff, and it's kind of not really that it wasn't terribly profitable, but then I started to license pictures to other people, and that really took off. Suddenly, they'd be selling 100,000 posters instead of me trying to sell 1,000. So that's kind of really where it took off, and that gave me the time to write my book, because I had to get away from running the shop and publishing and all that. It was a big bite, and I enjoyed it, but it was too much to keep going with for more than a couple of years.
So it's not there anymore?
Pardon?
It's not there
anymore? No, I found somebody else to take over the shop who ran it for another 2.5 years. And I went off, because I was getting bigger checks from licensing to other people than I was making, sales in the shop, let alone any profit. And that gave me time to write my book, which is really what I wanted to do. I didn't open the shop to become an artist or to print fractals. I kind of got led into that by the need for product to sell. But what I really wanted to do was help people understand about the implications of chaos theory and how we run our lives and our world, because it's a really important lesson, and it's not one that the scientists would look at. So that's why I wrote the book, and it really works. It works for people who read it, and it resonates with everything they feel, but it puts it into a structure that they and a cohesion that they've never really seen before.
Well, let's talk about your book a minute, and then we got like 10 more questions came in. Should I just read what was from your site about your book? It's called Perhaps, is that the title?
The new book, that's right, yeah.
What's it about?
That's about why it makes sense when you talk to plants or rivers or trees. And it really kind of pulls a lot of the different and distinct type of spiritual insights that we have, pulls them into a really cohesive whole. And it makes a lot of sense, again, of what we already know, but it really does enter a few new dimensions. There's one aspect of spirituality that people have a complete blank spot on, even though they understand lots about subatomic particles and about the universe itself. People forget about the sun. And I give that's quite central to my book, even though the book is about much more besides. Then we sort of, we ignore the sun because for the last 300 years anyway, that was like, you got burned for shit like that. The ultimate heresy to consider the sun as anything other than, some ball of fire up in the sky. And I kind of blow that open and open our eyes to what's happening there. And that pulls everything else into a really, really amazing picture. So that's been real fun.
Is this book available?
I'm looking for a publisher.
Have you heard of Lulu?
Have you heard of Lulu? But I have never really seen sales numbers on any of their books published, and I haven't seen any of them ever in Amazon.
Well, you have to do the distribution yourself with them. But
yeah.
Somebody sent in a question that I didn't think really pertained, and it really does here.
Right.
I don't know if you can answer it, but how many opinions do you think exist?
How many opinions
do you think exist? That's a real question that came in.
Okay, well, I'm just going to read. I'm not sure what he means by opinions, so because it's a wide question, but I'm going to just take so I can read it. It's out of my first book, Uncommon Sense. If you're talking about opinions on how we run the world, yeah, because we were sort of talking about that. I make a point in my first book that when you think of all the different states we've had in the world and all the, whether it was emperors or presidents or kings or commissars, they've all been run by different people, tweaked to the local circumstances, not consider the minor and major tweaking that has gone on throughout the history of the state. Okay, pharaoh, church, senate, king, emperor, president, military, junta, parliament, etc. It is apparent that there have already been many, many thousands of different combinations, or opinions for your questioner, been many thousands of different combinations attempted. None of them have worked in the long term, though some may have lasted more years than others. Now, do we really believe that, for instance, government version 273,583 going to be the one that finally works? And if that's opinions in government,
as long as they're by people, it's going to be flawed.
as long as it's run by force, it's going to be flawed. You know, what we don't appreciate is the natural government that we have when it comes to things that are still free, like what music we listen to or what type of shoes we buy. You know, you can go out and you can buy, you know, flip-flops, leather, snakeskin boots, you know, all manner of shoes, snowshoes and ballet shoes. And that's free, you know. Can you imagine if the government was running shoes and some office was deciding how many different shoe designs and you get for each class of the population, you know?
Church tried to do that with uniforms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are probably countries in the world where the government does run shoes. When I was in Zimbabwe 20 years ago, you know, the government made toilet paper. And there was only one brand of toilet paper, and it was shit, if you'll excuse the expression.
How can people get this book you just read from, Uncommon Sense?
Yeah, Uncommon Sense, The State is Out of Date. And it's online on the website, and it can also be purchased through Amazon.
Okay. We have about 6 minutes
left.
Come on,
Sherry. Time's running out.
And, here are the questions, so you can choose. One is, what do you think of The Secret, and that would create our own reality? Another question is, do you have any thoughts on the New World Order? Who's really trying to be in charge? Another question, what do you think would happen if everyone was required to tell the truth? And the last one, why do you think we need answers as to why this tree appeared here? They've gotten philosophical on this evening.
Right. I think if everybody told the truth, you know, great things would happen.
Would we fall apart first?
But how you require people to tell the truth... you know, then you sort of got sort of brain scanners on everybody, and you know when they tell a lie, the red thing lights up, and then you know.
Wasn't there a movie about that with Jim Carrey, about he couldn't tell a lie, and it caused chaos in his life?
Yeah, there might have been. My dad, that was one of the things my dad told me. You know, we'll never follow the beaten path. He said never. Never tell a lie, because then you won't have to remember what you said. You always tell the truth, then you don't have to remember what you said. And he also told me never to work for anybody else. What was the second question?
Well, one of the questions is, what do you think of the new movie, The Secret?
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's about how we create our own reality, and everything that happens to us is our own fault, our own issue, and you know, things like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I for a long time, I believed that, you know, we're responsible for whatever happens to us in our lives. But our reality is created by all of our past actions, but that's in combination with everything else that's happening in the world. You know, we're part of that world system, where everything affects everything else. So, you know, other events create our reality as well. You know? And I don't believe that it's, you know, purely self-created.
Well, I believe a part of that we create our own reality, and
yeah,
that what we put out comes back to us.
Yeah.
Well, look at Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Did he put out assassinations, and it came back to him? Did Martin Luther King put out assassination so it came back to him?
Yeah, I don't know.
See, there's some
flaws
in here, I think.
All
the new things that you've invented, you know, creativity, that which others have not thought to think, you know, if we create our own reality only by what we consciously think, I don't think the new stuff would come in, because I don't think that's from our dimension. That's
well,
from another
well,
place.
Yeah. What I was saying earlier is that, you know, everything around us creates our reality, and you know, this thing that, you know, if a tree falls in the forest and there's a human, not a human being there to see it, you know, it doesn't make any noise, it's crazy old thinking. And, you know, we are, other things create our reality. We have an influence on our lives, and but we can't always, you know, sometimes, you know, things will happen to a section of the world, and, you know, it's not an individual thing.
We
can share in each other's karma.
Well, if it was only intention, which this movie says, then the team that had the most fans would always win. And how about two people who have opposite realities? This is red, this is green. And I think we've gotten a signal that it's time for us to go. I heard that little beep. My clock must be wrong. Well, we'll have you back. There's a lot of more questions. And people out there, if you're into alternative medicine, alternative food, or alternative sense, go out and buy Gregory's book, Gregory Sands. It's Uncommon Sense. And I guess we have to go because time's up. And
it's been a real pleasure, Sherry.
We'll stay in touch.
Okay.
We'll go out with music.
Maybe this is all I have. Oh, whoa.